ज्ञानति मिनन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जलाशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, एनीवन हैज एनी क्वेश्चन? You have any question, Tanvi?
No, Prabhuji.
Okay. I think you had messaged me, no, one time. Like you were asking something and I think I forgot to reply back.
Now, I also don't remember, Prabhuji.
Asking something about the Dvaita, Advaita, something like that you had asked.
Yeah. I think 2 weeks back I asked about Dvaita and Advaita philosophy, like dual philosophy and single philosophy, something like that. I did not understand that actually.
So what is your question?
Actually, I read some article where they were saying that it was, I don't recollect because it was like 2 weeks back, but Dvaita philosophy was we have some qualities like the super soul Krishna, and super soul Krishna also has qualities like us, something it was related to that. Now I don't recollect it at all, but it was something related to this only. And some people, I think Shankar's Shivite, something, they followed the Advaita philosophy, I think. Single philosophy. I'm actually confused because I did not read the article properly and it was like 2 weeks back, so I have a very weak memory in this.
Yeah, so it is Advaitavad, Advaitavad. Shankaracharya followers are Advaitavad, which means that they believe in oneness. And they say that there is, we all are God, we cannot become God. Ultimately, God is a manifestation of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So we all actually, Krishna and all the demigods, you know, according to us, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the others are all demigods or servants of Krishna. But according to their philosophy, everyone is one. And even the Supreme Lord is actually a temporary manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. Okay, so they have a material body. But we say that Krishna is the Swayam Bhagwan and he has a transcendental body. So that is the difference.
it is all about oneness. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So they all, you know, believe in the principle of oneness, that everything is one ultimately. So we are all one, and we also merge in that oneness after we attain liberation. Okay? So there is no concept of service because we are all God. So whom we are going to serve? And ultimately we are going to lose our identity. So there is no question of service. Everything is one. And Dvaitavad is the opposite. You know, Supreme Lord is there and his part and parcel. So they are all supposed to serve the Supreme Lord. So obviously there will be difference in the quantity. Although there are similarities in terms of quality, but there is infinite difference in terms of the quantity. That is Dvaitavad. I mean, Dvaitavad, you know, like there are four Vaishnava Sampradayas. Dvaitavad is actually the dualistic concept. But that is one philosophy, Vaishnava philosophy. And there are the other philosophies like Vishishta Advaita and Shuddha Advaita. And then there is Dvaita Advaita. And then finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has synthesized all these four Vaishnava philosophies into Achintya Bheda Bhed Tattva, which is all inclusive of all these four philosophies. So these four philosophies, they are actually they contradict to some extent these scriptures. Okay, only Achinta Bhedade Tattva, it is harmonizing all these philosophies and it does not contradict the scripture. Because it's a perfect balance between Dvaitavad and Advaitavad. Okay, and so Advaitavad also is contradicting statements from the Shastra, which is giving a picture of Dvaitavad, or it is giving picture of the personal aspect of the Lord, the transcendental form of the Lord. So it contradicts that. Okay, and only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achinta Bhedabhed is a complete harmonistic philosophy, which is resolving all the contradictions. Okay?
Yes, Prabhuji, thank you.
Yeah, okay. So, Nirvika, you had any question?
No, Prabhuji, I don't have any question as of right now.
Okay. So I have a question for you both and those who are joined the class. So now, you know, this question has been a concern for all the devotees in ISKCON, and I think many devotees, they come across this confusion and doubt about what we have to do, you know, in bhakti. What is more important? So some devotees feel that chanting more rounds is more important. Some feel that preaching is more important. So what is the general common idea that Prabhupada presented in ISKCON? How you know, what did he emphasize more? So what do you think?
I think, Prabhuji, chanting and preaching both simultaneously.
Okay. How much time we have to give to each of them? Should we give more time to chanting? Should we give more time to preaching? Okay. So, if given an option, would you chant 64 rounds every day and then preach for less time? Or would you preach for more time and chant 16 rounds or 20 or 25 rounds every day? What would be a better option?
Second option, Prabhuji. Preaching more and chanting 16 rounds or 20 rounds.
Okay. And Nirvika, what do you think?
The balance for both should be there, chanting is also there, the minimum rounds that you have decided to do, and plus there's reading and hearing, like that is also like part of the sadhana also that we do, and then we should definitely go for preaching, so it's like the balance which you feel that, you know, it's not, because when you're preaching, there should even be like some sense of purity in ourselves, so that the preaching would also at least be to some extent effective. And that happens when we do our sadhana properly. So so it's like a good balance of both of them.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a very good point. And so now, okay, balance. So what was Prabhupada's emphasis? You know, what did he emphasize and what was his emphasis? And what did Prabhupada, like, you know, what was the general approach of Prabhupada to, you know, towards this thing?
Prabhuji, Prabhupada said ki instead of constructing more temples, you should construct more devotees.
Make more devotees, okay.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, so Prabhupada, he said, yeah, temple construction was secondary. He was emphasizing more on preaching first. So preaching basically, you know, meaning book distribution and other forms of preaching. And temple building was secondary to that. So yeah, Prabhupada did emphasize that. So, you know, it is also important that, so basically, I think Prabhupada was comparing between book distribution and temple construction, because book distribution is the real thing, you know, in terms of that, you know, even if you want to build a temple, you need Lakshmi for that, and that Lakshmi will come by book distribution. So initially, the entire ISKCON empire was set up, the foundation stone was actually completely on book distribution, because all the money that Prabhupada got, completely it was from book distribution. And then once devotees, they were, you know, they started selling Krishna book, the book distribution started spreading wildfire. And because of that, you know, they were earning millions of dollars almost every month. And, you know, and because of this only, this concept of temple building came up. So Prabhupada said that whatever Lakshmi you collect from book distribution, 50% should be there to publish more books, and 50% should go for the temple construction or any other kind of project. So because of that, this concept was there, that 50%, 50%, you know, like that. So obviously we understand that book distribution was taken precedence over the temple openings. And obviously that is the best form of preaching, as we know. So, you know, basically Prabhupada, and see, in certain places where, you know, if you have a temple, that might attract many people. So maybe that is the best form of preaching also in certain areas, certain places. Because, you know, especially in India, people want temples. They want to go to temple. So temple is a must. If you don't have temple, just by going to the centers, small centers, base, so-called, you know, it's not so fascinating for Indian people. This concept is actually more popular in the Western countries, because they, anyways, they don't have any concept of a proper temple, or they are not like attached to a particular god or demigod right from the beginning. But Indians, they are definitely attached to temple worship, going to temples and all that. It's a tradition in India. So you can say that, okay, in India, we you know, that the temple worship is one of the best form of preaching also. And when we have a temple, the temple has everything also. Like the temple has prasadam, you know, like we have Govindas, or we have prasadam distribution program, then we have life member program, then we have book distribution program. So it's a foundation, it's a base where everything can be operated simultaneously. So in that way also, temple is actually very helpful. You know, not just for the devotees, because devotees also can come together and they can worship the Lord together. So that way also temple worship, temple building is very important aspect. Then we have deity worship in the temple, right? So then we have preaching programs in the temple. So many things. So temple is a holistic place where everything can be operated simultaneously, right? So in that sense, temple can be the best form of preaching also, because having a center like a temple can serve multiple purposes. So obviously it all depends on how much funds, Lakshmi, you have. If you don't have so much Lakshmi and fund, it's good to start with a small center and then gradually build it up, right? But in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami suggests that temples should not be built, you know, extravagant, magnificent temples should not be built. You know, the devotees, they should not build. Why? With the emphasis and with the context that devotees should not get attached to the temple facilities. And at the same time, they should not become lazy. Okay, and they should not become attached to it. Otherwise, that will spoil the devotees' devotion, because they will become more of, you know, they will become diplomatic in their relationship. They will be more attached to the position in the temple, and all these things will be there. And then they'll have to deal with so many people, you know, like they might be carried away. They might be fascinated to money also, right? So these things are there, you know, the consequences of building a big temple. But if a devotee is not affected by it, then temple opening is definitely one of the most important form of preaching. And not just for the devotee community, but for outsiders also. So it gives people a chance to become devotees, right? People can come together. Like, you know, if you go to US or Canada or any other country in the Western world, just by having a temple, will gather people. You don't have to go anywhere else, because generally people want to go to the temple. You know, they find some kind of peace, satisfaction, happiness. So they want to visit the temple where the deity is worshipped. And if it's a grand temple, then obviously many people want to go there. If it's a small temple, no one will come generally. But if it's a grand temple, then many people come. right. So now at the same time, if you provide education, okay, that is also sufficient. If people, because see, there are like for example, in Jew temple, there are lakhs of people visiting almost every day. Okay, but this is not the same everywhere. But if you see in terms of the ratio of number of devotees being made and the quality of the devotees, then maybe other temples are probably superior to that, you know, in some way, right? So it is not just about attracting massive number of people. It is also about providing quality time and quality education to the people and training them properly. You know, so that also is another thing. So these things are all, you know, there. And now if you want to preach, so we have to preach means, you know, we have to, I think, as you know, Nirvika was also mentioning that if you want to preach effectively, your sadhana should be strong. So one thing is for sure that 16 rounds minimum, four aggregate principles, and preaching. Now see, preaching, in order to be successful, we should have the purity. And that can only come, and see now, these are the minimum things, like, you know, 16 rounds and 4 eggs. But if you want to effectively preach, and if you want to go deep in your Krishna consciousness, so that you can attain that purity, you have to hear and read also, regularly. So I was just, yesterday only I was listening to Radhanath Maharaj, one small clip on YouTube. And Maharaj was mentioning the importance of hearing and chanting, hearing and reading regularly. And he was saying that if you don't do that, then a time will come when you'll think that the deities in the temple, they are just ordinary, or they're just like material elements. You'll not be appreciate them very deeply. And you'll not be able to realize that they are the Lord themselves in a temple. So hearing and reading, these are the foundations. And Shravanam specifically, you know, is a foundation of spiritual life. Without hearing, you cannot even chant properly, and you cannot even preach properly. Because if you have not heard properly, what are you going to say? Right? So if you want to preach, whatever you have to hear also simultaneously. And then you just repeat that, and it will have effect. So it should be a balanced approach, you know, as Nirvika was saying, because for brahmacharis, you know, they might be able to chant more rounds. But for the Grihasthas, to chant more rounds and to also preach the same time and to also maintain the sadhana, you know, it is very difficult. So, especially, see, that is the reason Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he did not ask the Grihasthas to chant 64 rounds. What he did, you know, he asked the Grihasthas to chant 16 rounds, minimum 16 or 32. I don't remember exactly, but I believe it was probably 32 or like 16, something like that. And he asked the sannyasis to chant 64 rounds every day. Okay. So that was the strategy of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada made this strategy even more simple, in the sense that even brahmacharis also, they don't have to like really chant 64 rounds. You know, he asked them to chant, everyone has to chant 16 rounds, whichever ashram one is. And then obviously one has to be fully Krishna conscious, in the sense that throughout the day, it is very important to be Krishna conscious. And in order to do that, it is necessary that we have to preach also. And see, just chanting, if you just chant the holy name and if you just keep hearing, that will not have so much effect. Because the problem is, okay, what will be the problem if you only hear, if you only read, if you only chant? What will be the problem with this? What should be accompanied by this? Very, very important.
Prabhuji, service.
Yeah, service, exactly. So without service, how will you know? How will you understand whatever you sadhana you are doing, how much strength, purity the sadhana has? How much you are able to tolerate provoking situations? How much you are able to deal with people? How much your sadhana is influenced by external activities? Or how much you are affected by external world? So all these things are that can only be known to us. It can be revealed to us when we are doing some service. And obviously, we do service in the association of devotees. So there will be seniors, authorities, who will also tell us, correct us, that what we are doing is wrong. Now, if you are only chanting and hearing and reading, how will anyone know what is your anartha? You know, except Krishna and Prabhupada or Guru, you know, until it is revealed to the Guru, no one will know what anartha you have. So, what anarthas we have can only be exposed or can only be known to other people when we associate with them and when we honestly, you know, serve and then we also share with them. Right? So then only actually whatever sadhana we have done, it will give us a real experience of who we are. Okay. Otherwise, if you're not doing any service, you know, and service, you know, by service I mean that whether you are a grihastha, whether you are whichever ashram, you have to pick up one service, which you can do every day. Now, every day, you know, on a regular basis, or at least on a regular basis. So it can be once in a week also, or it can be every day also, or it can be 2 or 3 days in a week also. So if you are doing that service, then only you can easily understand, you know, what is our anartha. You know, so obviously, depending on the sincerity, Krishna will arrange things for us. So it is, you know, for a grihastha who is working outside the entire day, obviously they will not have time for serving practically. So then, obviously, one way is to donate their Lakshmi. And the second way is that whenever possible, they should find some time, well, at least once in a week, and they should serve, do some service. Okay. Otherwise, it is, or at least on a regular basis, one should do that service. Otherwise, it will be difficult, you know, because anarthas can only come out when we associate with devotees. And devotees can see that, especially our seniors and our Gurujan. Okay. So now, it is obviously, the question is, you know, whether one should chant 64 rounds every day and preach for 2 hours, or one should preach for 6 to 8 hours and chant, you know, for 3 hours or something like that. So, like, you know, if you have 10 hours in your day, so some devotees, obviously 2 hours of chanting is minimum for everyone, right? But then the other 8 hours, a devotee might put into more chanting, and some other devotees might put that 8 hours into more preaching. So see, generally the approach by Srila Prabhupada is that devotees should preach. That was his approach, because he was very much representing the mood of Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is, you know, and he was taking that one instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Prithivirya Nagara Vigram Sarvatra Prachar Hoibe Muranam, that each and every town and village spread the holy name. So that was the instruction by Mahaprabhu. And then obviously you also mentioned that whoever has taken birth in Bharat Bhumi, they should also preach. It is their responsibility to preach. Okay. So now, technically speaking, if you see the Acharya mood, our Acharya mood, the how he has you know, conducted ISKCON, he has led ISKCON in a direction, then you will see that preaching was the most emphasized thing, that, you know, by Srila Prabhupada. He emphasized preaching a lot. Okay, and then there were also instances where devotees were chanting more number of rounds. Even in Vrindavan also, you know, there was one particular devotee, his name was Bhagatji. And Bhagatji was chanting, you know, he was doing bhakti bhajan in isolation. Like, because he wanted to relish Krishna consciousness, so he was not so actively involved in services in Vrindavan. So then, you know, Prabhupada had a meeting with him, and, you know, he asked him a couple of questions, and he told him. And, you know, he told him that, so what do you think? Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this philosophy. So it is actually our duty, you know, that we should go and preach more. So, and then Prabhupada asked him, so what do you think now? So do you agree with all this, whatever I have mentioned? So he said, yes, Prabhupada, I agree. So he was like defeated by Prabhupada, and finally accepted, you know, he surrendered to Prabhupada. And there are so many instances, other instances that Prabhupada devotees were chanting more rounds. See, now Prabhupada definitely, if some devotee would chant 25 rounds every day, he would encourage that and he would approve of it. But if they chanted more than that, you know, like 64 rounds or maybe, you know, more than 40 rounds or more than 32 rounds or something like that, Prabhupada probably, I think in certain occasions he did not approve of that. So, you know, he emphasized preaching again to all these devotees. And so he said that devotees, they should preach, they should spend more time on preaching. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, you know. See, we are not pure devotees, we are not Nitya Siddhas, that just by our chanting people will come to us and then they will become devotees. Okay, that can be done by these acharyas also. In fact, Prabhupada could have done it also. But the example that Prabhupada said is that he left Vrindavan and then he went to the foreign countries and he has spread. So see, if Holy Way would have been spread like that only, Prabhupada would have stayed in Vrindavan only. But no, it did not happen like that. Prabhupada left Vrindavan and then he came. Right? So, so this is the point that we have to, if we are, you know, if we are increasing our chanting, you know, with no service and with no preaching, then that chanting is not going to give us so much benefit. It is not going to give us that much benefit because we have to follow the Sampradaya Acharya and we have to also know that just by chanting the holy name for a long time, it's not necessary that Krishna is going to reveal to us. So you have to, so one has to, you know, take blessings from the Guru also. And for a specific purpose or for some reason, a devotee is allowed to chant more rounds or to do bhajan. You know, especially like Prabhupada said that older devotees, they can retire because, you know, obviously they cannot do physical seva. And, you know, because if they are not able to do preaching also, then what is the only thing that is remaining at the end of their life is to, like, just keep chanting. And then obviously Prabhupada said they can go and live in Vrindavan also, Vrindavan Mayapur. But personally, from Prabhupada's example also, we see that when he was at such an advanced age, he never stopped preaching. Till the last breath, Prabhupada was preaching. Okay. Obviously, Prabhupada's standard is, example is unique, extraordinary. So we cannot compare, we cannot imitate that. But to our best capacity, one should try to preach as much as possible. Unless and until the last breath has stopped or it is causing a lot of physical discomfort, till that time one should preach. Or unless it is like, you know, that Krishna really wants you to do only bhajan. It's a different thing. But otherwise, one should preach because, first of all, it is a service, you know, and Prabhupada says that if you want to attain special attention of the Lord, then preaching is the best form. There is a shortcut in the process. When you preach, you're trying to give Krishna consciousness to others. So that is the most pleasing form of service to the Father, because every father will be pleased if you get more of his lost children back to him. That will be the most pleasing thing to the Father, right? So when you preach and when you are trying to attract more people, trying to give them Krishna consciousness, there is a element of compassion in that, which the Lord obviously, you know, he loves that like anything. So it is very dear to the Lord. So we have to, when we preach to others, and now, you see, obviously, if there was a, so Niranjan Maharaj once mentioned that what if you have two options, chanting 64 rounds every day or thinking of making 64 devotees every day, or even if you make, even if you are able to make 64 devotees in your lifetime, 64 is a huge number, let me tell you, very honestly, it's a very huge number. 64 is not at all easy. Even if you, see, let's say if you make 64 devotees in your lifetime, that means on an average, you are making one devotee per year. Because let's say, you know, currently if you are 30 years now or less than that, you are going to stay for another 60 years. So on an average, it is like one devotee a year. And you cannot imagine how much it can please Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, one devotee a year, it's a very difficult thing. See, to chant extra round, very simple. But to make one devotee, it takes a lifetime. It takes, you know, the entire, like Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said, I have spent gallons of blood to make one devotee. So he was very careful that not a single devotee should go away. Okay, so Niranjan Maharaj was asking this question, what is more important? What do you think, what would you prefer? To make 64 devotees or to chant 64 rounds every day? So what do you think? What is your answer? What would you prefer?
Okay.
And we? Hare Krishna, Tanvi, are you there? Hari Bol, Tanvi? I don't think. Okay, so yeah, it is obvious, you know, if given an opportunity or given an option, which one would you prefer? It is obvious that one would prefer for 64 rounds because, see, the happiness and satisfaction that we get from giving Krishna consciousness to others and then others experiencing the bliss and being happy, that is the most, the biggest satisfaction for us. Okay, so it is, you know, obvious that one would want to make more and more devotees, to increase the number of devotees. So now if you want to increase the number of devotees, you have to also train them, you have to also guide them. So obviously all these things require a lot of time. And that's the reason, you know, you have to invest time in such a way. And see, one more thing is there, that you don't even have to chant extra rounds. Because chanting is the internalization of your Krishna consciousness. You can do preaching and you can chant also the holy name. You know, that is what the Vrajvasis keep doing the entire day. See, they are not just chanting the holy name. See, if you only chant the holy name, then it becomes, you know, the service is gone. There is no service. There is no active service. If you are only chanting the holy name, with what intention are you chanting the holy name? What is the goal of chanting the holy name? You want to please the Lord. But then if you, like, you know, Prabhupada said that if you just say, I love you, 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 you keep chanting and repeating that. So, like, will it make any sense? Unless, of course, by a physical, personal service to the recipient, it doesn't make sense. So, in the spiritual world also, active service is always in the forefront. You know, the service is always there, that is in the forefront. But chanting is in the background. And in the material world, chanting is in the forefront. But the forefront means what? Forefront meaning that chanting, the goal is that we reach a stage where we constantly remember and chant the glories of the Lord. That is the goal, that is to internalize your chanting. But at the same time, it has to be accompanied by service. So it is not that, you know, one should only focus on one's bhajan. Obviously, if the Lord wants that, then ultimately we want to please the Lord. So then obviously the main service is to chant the holy name throughout the day. Okay. But in general, when you are not being given such an instruction, it is assumed that, you know, a devotee has to serve also. First of all, chanting the holy name is also a big thing. You cannot chant throughout the day also, you know, for every day. So, because we have so many attachments. So that is also true. But at the same time, there are devotees who are attached to chanting. They like chanting more and more. But they are unable to take any responsibility for the mission of Prabhupada. So that is also incomplete. That is also difficult. You know, if you are given some management responsibilities or some kind of leadership responsibility or some kind of guru responsibility, if you don't take it up, that means you want to avoid headaches. You want to avoid the burden of love. Because you just want to relish, so you just want to focus on chanting. And whether Krishna is revealing or not, that's a different thing. We never know that, you know, unless it is approved by the Guru. But actually, technically speaking, there is no need for chanting extra number of rounds unless you, like, you have taken a vow and you are committed, you know, for a particular minimum number of rounds. Beyond that, there is no need for actually showing and, you know, chanting extra rounds, because you can chant the holy name 24 hours a day with doing services also. Whenever, you know, some service requires deep absorption thoughts, you know, like we have to deeply think about certain things and then we have to preach. So obviously during that time we might not be able to chant, but whenever we get an opportunity in between, we can chant the holy name. So, and Prabhupada also said that service is also chanting, you know, serving the holy name is also chanting the holy name. There is no difference actually. In one sense, there is no difference. So if you are serving the holy name, you are also chanting the holy name. Don't consider different. So, you know, because, see, these things I'm sharing, because there are some devotees in our ISKCON movement, you know, they have this thing that, you know, they will, you know, like, they all get together and they chant many number of rounds and, you know, the focus is chanting, I mean, chanting together. But Prabhupada did not create that kind of atmosphere in ISKCON. He wanted that what we should preach. So it is, see, so now if by chanting more number of rounds, if devotees are automatically, like outside people are coming to you automatically and they are made devotees, you know, through that, then okay, then it is quite justified. You know, then you have the purity, you know, you just sit at one place, pray to the Lord and He will send you people. Okay, but generally this kind of thing does not happen. And Prabhupada was actually the main, you know, see, He could have done like that, but Prabhupada left Vrindavan and then He came. So he took so much effort, pain, labor. So how do you expect that a devotee or ordinary devotee, not even, you know, a pure devotee, can just chant so many rounds every day, just sit at one place and expect that, you know, he would preach like that? That is not, I think it is quite difficult. Unless you are like Prabhupada, you know, and you know, Prabhupada also did not follow that example. So it is obvious that, you know, devotees should actually spend more time in their preaching. And that would also mean, see, now when you preach, when you teach, preach, then you will actually understand and realize that you have to hear also and you have to read also regularly. If you don't preach, if you don't teach, and if you don't train others, then just by chanting also your cycle will go on. You don't have to put that extra effort to read and hear. Just by chanting, the cycle will go on, but you'll never realize, you'll never understand what is your advancement level, because you have never taught someone. And once you start teaching others, then the more you teach, the more you preach, the more you realize that you have to attain knowledge, because there will be questions coming on, there will be challenges coming on. So you have to really know what Prabhupada wanted from us, what Prabhupada actually would expect us to do at this particular situation. And that you can only know when you yourself, you have read about Prabhupada, his teachings and everything. Okay, so the you know, so this is about our you know, managing and balancing time. But I would obviously say, you know, following and understanding Prabhupada's mood and the mood of our Gurujan in ISKCON, I would definitely say that yeah, preaching is actually more important, and we should focus more on that. We should also spend more time on that. At the same time, we should also cultivate our Krishna consciousness internally, deeply. Okay. So when you preach, automatically you will hear and read also. That will come 100%. Okay. And by hearing and reading, your sadhana will also go deep. So you will be able to connect with the Lord and the Acharya more and more deeply. Okay. So that is the multiple benefits of preaching. You are helping others. You are also helping yourself by going deep in Krishna consciousness, sharing with others, and, you know, so it's a very amazing service that we can actually do. Plus, preaching, basically, you're not preaching to others, you're preaching to yourself also. So that way, we can always follow try to follow higher standards with time. We can also try to increase in our standards with time. Okay. So this is, you know, about managing and preaching and chanting, you know, the holy name. So it is, so wherever you have, you know, this kind of, wherever you hear and see this kind of groups or devotees who, you know, they want to chant more rounds and they are associating with those kind of devotees, I think it is better that let them do their thing and we should all focus more on preaching. Okay. So, and then obviously, if devotees are chanting more number of rounds and they are preaching also simultaneously, that's the best thing that can happen. But it is not necessary that those who are chanting more rounds, they are more pure. Because chanting is, after all, the overall lifestyle. So, someone chanting purely, see, someone can chant 16 rounds with lot of purity. Then compared to other devotees who are chanting 32 rounds or 64 rounds every day with some kind of impurity, okay, or with their lifestyle or with their behavior or with their, you know, if they are committing offenses, then that will nullify their 64 rounds. And see, this is the model that Prabhupada has given us, that the morning program, then the 16 rounds, and then either you work as a grihastha or you preach for 6 to 8 hours a day, and then you go in, and so I mean, you know, this is how our sadhana and preaching or service will increase with time. This is how Prabhupada has given the perfect balance of everything. So if you preach more, naturally you will feel you want to go deeply in Krishna consciousness also, because that is the outcome of your preaching. So that's how you receive the Mahaprabhu's mercy. And because of Mahaprabhu's mercy, you get attached to him and you want to go more deeply in Krishna consciousness. And going more deep in Krishna consciousness means that, again, you want to serve the Lord more and more with your best capacity, as long as physically you are able to do it. So, preaching is, see, it's a shortcut thing, first of all. It has multiple benefits, that's the second thing. It's a short way to please Prabhupada. If devotees prefer to chant more, you know, rounds, but not preach, that's a risk they are taking. First of all, they are not even aware, they do not even know what is the effect of their extra number of chanting, rounds of chanting, you know, how much advancement they are making, whether Krishna is revealing to them or not, they are not aware of that, that they do not know that. So it's a kind of a risk, because generally it is not the recommended path. And Prabhupada emphasized the Goshtanandi path. He did not recommend the Bhajnanandi path. Right? So, this Goshtanandi path is the short way to go back to God and to please Prabhupada. It's a shortcut. It has multiple benefits. It can create very good atmosphere in your, you know, surroundings. One thing I do recollect, one of the memories that one Prabhupada disciple shared, that one time Prabhupada was telling to his disciples, you know, because so he was like giving his comments on the war that was about to happen. I mean, he was thinking that the war will happen. So Prabhupada said that, you know, we should have a war. You know, the war will happen between China, India, and so there will be a World War III soon. And so devotees were asking, but Prabhupada, like, you know, why should we have the war? Because war is a very it's a very contemptible thing, right? It's not so, it's a, you know, any devotee would feel compassion for the lives of people. Okay. So it's a very discouraging thing. It's a very adverse thing that a war happens. But Prabhupada said, no, war should happen and it will happen. So then the, you know, disciple asked Prabhupada, that, so, okay, why do you think the war should happen? And then Prabhupada said, because wherever there is atheism and communism, a war should take place. And that is the reason even Krishna, you know, had a war. So he actually instigated the war between the Pandavas and Kauravas, and he eliminated all the demons. So similarly, wherever there is atheism and communism, a war can actually solve the problem. Okay, so Prabhupada did say that a war will happen. And then after some time, Prabhupada said, the disciple asked the question to Prabhupada, that is there a way we can avoid the war? And so Prabhupada said, he said there is no way to avoid this now. And then after some time, Prabhupada said that actually there is one way. And he said, if you profusely distribute my books in all the countries, in all the, you know, Western countries or whichever country, then, you know, this is a very powerful statement, he said, that because of the books being distributed, that will create, naturally create love and peace amongst all the living entities in the world. And because of that, the war can be completely avoided. It will not happen, Prabhupada said.
Wow.
So see, it's a practical way of expressing, you know, how a thing like a war can be avoided just by distributing Prabhupada's books. Because that aura and that atmosphere, the environment is purified, you know, when someone has a book, Prabhupada's books, you know. So, as we know that Prabhupada's books are all time bombs. It can blast any moment and it will completely change the surroundings also. So similarly, whether it is the holy name or whether it is Prabhupada's books or whether it is Prasad, whichever things connected to Krishna, if they are at someone's house, someone's place or nearby area, then definitely there will be, you know, the war and all the negative influences will subside with time. So like, you know, in the Shastra it is mentioned that whoever has a Shaligram Shila in their house, those who are living at the distance of 10 kilometers from the Shaligram, they all go back to Godhead. So now obviously this is not exaggeration. It is, you know, if someone has that faith, that, you know, then definitely it will happen. And at the same time, one should be offenseless in their demeanor. So one will be attain liberation at least, you know, that is what the Shastra says. So then we can just imagine that Prabhupada books means, we have the teachings of the pure devotee. And it will have a lot of influence. It will have a lot of positive energy, which will be vibrated, emanated from that. And it will create peace and harmony. So it will, Prabhupada said that whoever is grief-stricken, whoever is angry, you know, they will all become more peaceful when the books are distributed. So that's a result of distributing books. That's a byproduct of distributing books. That even though, see, someone might not become a devotee, but just by keeping the books in people's house and giving to them, that creates an atmosphere of positiveness. Okay, so that will spread throughout the world gradually. And that is the thing how war can be avoided. So see, what is the effect of this preaching? You know, the preaching has amazing effects, tremendous. And what is the effect of the chanting extra number of rounds? You're not even sure. It will, first of all, it will only help you. And in order to chant the pure names, you have to be very advanced. You cannot chant the names purely unless you cross the stage of Ruchi Asakti. You have to cross Anartha Nivritti. Then only the chanting of the holy names will have a lot of clarity. So this is what is actually recommended. It's the most best, the best thing that can actually, the best service that you can offer to the Lord. Okay, so preaching for more time, and then preaching involves a lot of absorption also. It requires a lot of thoughtfulness also. So for example, when Kartik and Purushottam mass come, all these years, you know, what I have been doing is chanting extra rounds. But just starting from last year, last Purushottam mass and then Kartik mass, you know, I was working on the frequently asked questions and the question answers for devotees in both the months. And I actually realized that I was not so Krishna conscious, just by chanting extra rounds. When I was actually being thoughtful about it and I was writing and I was typing everything. So I was very deeply absorbed in that. So it's a very practical and very inspiring and enthusiastic service, you know, one can preach. And that is the best thing. And obviously, along with the preaching, as you know, Arjuna was not chanting the holy name, as we know, you know, Krishna, Prabhupada said that, Mam Yuddha Smarascha, that you fight and you also remember me. So Arjuna was remembering the Lord. He was not chanting on a regular basis or on a steady basis. Or he was not chanting the holy name on a japa bead or something. because he had to fight in the war. So, but according, with his fighting, you are also remembering the Lord. And that is what is actually the most important thing, that you can chant the holy name, but you can get distracted by that chanting. And, you know, you might chant one or two rounds very nicely, attentively, but the remaining other rounds, you might chant in a very distracted way, in a very inattentive way. So then what is the use of that kind of chanting? So the idea is that maximum remembrance, smaranam, should be there. So see, that is the reason, this is a sequence. Shravanam, kirtanam, both of these things should lead you to smaranam. Shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. It's not smaranam, it is not kirtanam and then shravanam. You cannot chant only without hearing. So you hear first, then you chant, and that chanting should naturally make you remember of Krishna. Right? So preaching is actually a very effective tool for our sadhana as well as for our Krishna consciousness. That is the reason even Vaisheshika Prabhu also says that this book distribution is actually a heavy sadhana. So, you know, he is calling it as a heavy sadhana. He is not saying that it's a service. So preaching is actually both. It is sadhana as well as seva also. Okay, so does this make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. yeah, okay, so this is one thing that I wanted to cover. One more thing I wanted to, forgot, one more topic relevant. I forgot about it. Anyways, to the extent that Prabhupada, you know, one time, one group of disciples, they went to Prabhupada. And, you know, they told him that there is some opportunity in Punjab area to preach. And so Prabhupada was very eager to, you know, what can be done. So then he went and, you know, he called the GBC of that time, Vrindavan Temple, UP, you know, and all these areas, they were at one zone. And Punjab area was another zone. So he called the disciples from the UP zone, which is from Vrindavan, the GBC from Vrindavan Temple. And then he told them that, okay, so now can you send, you know, so he referred to one pujari who was serving in the temple. And he told the GBC that, okay, I want that you send this devotee to serve and, you know, help this devotee in Punjab. And so the GBC were actually hesitating to send someone because he thought that, you know, this devotee is a pujari and he's helping a lot. And like he basically did not want other devotees to go anywhere else. But all of them wanted that, you know, they should be in their local zone only and they should serve. So Prabhupada said that actually, Prabhupada, you know, for first the disciple, the GBC said, that Prabhupada, you know, like he's a pujari and, you know, he's doing important seva. And you know what Prabhupada said? He said, pujari means fifth class. Preaching is first class. So even though he's being a pujari, send him to the Punjab zone and let him preach. And then he said that, what is pujari? Pujari, anyone can offer tulsi and water to the Lord and that is deity worship. Anyone can do that. So, you know, he said to the extent that pujari means fifth class, you know, or deity worship is fifth class and first class is preaching. So whenever there is a conflict between preaching and deity worship, Prabhupada always gave more emphasis to preaching. Okay, and obviously we know that deity worship is actually, it's a panchashastric mark and preaching is the Bhagavat Vidhi mark. So which Bhagavat mark is actually more important than a panchashastric mark. It should be balanced. But when there is a conflict, you know, certain things are more important. So Bhagavat Vidhi Marg is more important. So that cannot be compromised for the panchratik sake. Okay. And so Prabhupada emphasized preaching a lot. So we'll see, you know, many letters of Prabhupada, you know, he talks about preaching and he's comparing preaching and deity worship and all that. Okay. So this is what, you know, Prabhupada actually emphasized a lot. Yeah, so now I just wanted to share a couple of things, you know, about Prabhupada memories. So one thing that I heard, you know, is that Prabhupada was explaining that spiritual world is full of consciousness. Everything is conscious in the spiritual world. And then, so he, you know, the devotees were like thinking, you know, so what does it mean that everything is conscious? Because, you know, the table, the land, the trees, the grass, the dust, and, you know, the paraphernalia of the Lord, everything is conscious. So devotees were thinking what, and then after some time Prabhupada said, he gave an example, and he said that when Radharani is cooking rice, she's asking the rice, are you ready? And the rice says, I'm not ready as of now, after some time. And then Radharani will wait for some time, and then the rice is cooked. So this is how the, you know, there is an exchange of thoughts. You know, so the rice is also conscious, and the rice and everything, each and everything in the spiritual world wants to serve Krishna. So, you know, that's how the service is actually done. So it's a very amazing thing. A couple of things I just forgot. Heard today only one thing. So very interesting thing, you know. So when Prabhupada, so okay, like I think, you know, you must have heard about the you know, the Jagannath deities, you know, in Jagannath Puri, that how Prabhupada actually wanted so much to make their disciples, to make his disciples go to the Jagannath temple so that they can be allowed. And, you know, he specifically made it a point to speak to the Pandas and to request them so that they can allow his disciples to enter the temple. And so, so what did Prabhupada's, you know, what was his stand on this? Do you know? Haribol, are you there?
I think he yes, said that.
Tanvi, so what did Prabhupada, what was his stand about Jagannath temple?
Prabhupada, I don't know.
Okay, yeah, Nirvika.
I think he said that since they are Vaishnavs, so they should be allowed because they are practicing Krishna consciousness and they are thinking of the Lord and taking the Lord's name. To that effect, it was begun.
Yeah, that's true. And you also said, you know, that Jagannath is Jagannath. He's not Oriyanath. Not Purina. So he has to be taken outside to the world. And obviously, my disciples should be allowed. So he was generally talking about his disciples. He was not saying that these Hindus should also be allowed. So basically, he was making a point that those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, sincerely, so they are Vaishnavas. So they should be allowed. My disciples should be allowed. So he was not representing any other sampradaya or any other caste or creed. Okay, so, you know, he actually insisted this many times to them, but they did not respond properly. Like there was one time, you know, they had arranged a meeting with the Pandas. Prabhupada was going to meet the Pandas. And the Pandas, when the meeting time was fixed, the Pandas did not show up. And Prabhupada got really angry. And he said that, you know, in the future, Jagannath will get up from that place and he will walk into one of our ISKCON temples. he'll leave that place and walk into one of our ISKCON temples. So Prabhupada, you know, said like that. And so that Prabhupada disciple, Sevananda Das, his name is Sevananda Prabhu, he was mentioning that, you know, like, so we already got a temple in Bhubaneswar. You know, and then after some time, you know, after Prabhupada's disappearance, they also got a land in Puri to build the ISKCON temple. So he was saying that, you know, whether which place Jagannath will leave the original temple and walk in which ISKCON temple, that is not known till now. But the Pandas, they are all afraid of this statement by Prabhupada, because thinking that he's a pure Vaishnav, and since he said that, so they are all afraid that any time, you know, if, like, Jagannath might just get up and he might just walk away.
Prabhuji, I heard that in some years, I mean, not like, I don't know how many years, but he is going to like shift to Russia. Because of the, I mean, like the temple, for some reason, like the deities will not be there only, but they will move to Russia.
They will move to, okay, I don't know if Russia was mentioned, but, you know, Prabhupada just mentioned that he will walk into one of our ISKCON temples. And maybe, I mean, to me it sounds, you know, Puri or Bhubaneswar sounds more practical, you know, and Russia sounds, you know, but obviously, you know, anything can happen, because Prabhupada introduced the worship of Jagannath throughout the world. So he can move in any of the temples in ISKCON. And as we know, even the Rajapur Jagannath deity is also not different from Puri. So they are also residing in Mayapur. Mayapur is a dham, you know, so obviously that's a special thing. But yeah, outside, it is possible, you know, by Prabhupada's desire, the Jagannath can actually, because he is the, in order to prove that he is the Lord of the universe, he has to come outside from Puri, you know, and so it is possible also. But yeah, maybe more practically connected to the Puri temple or the Bhubaneswar temple. Because Prabhupada actually wanted Bhubaneswar to be built much more bigger than the Puri temple. That is what, you know, because he was very upset. He was very angry with these Pandas. And he did not like the idea that they are not inviting, allowing the Vaishnavas to enter. So he you know, as a warrior or as a Kshatriya, you know, he showed his spirit, you know, as a servant of Krishna, he showed his spirit that, you know, I can also do something. What do you think? You know, and obviously, you know, it is not at all ego, you know, it is a service attitude, because Prabhupada, he was completely pure, so it was a pure ego, you can say like that, in the service of Lord. And it's a challenge, like, you know, the way Prabhupada accepted the challenge in Jew temple when he already had established the deities of Ras Bihari. So he made a vow to Ras Bihari that, you know, I'll stay here, and I will promise that I will worship you here. So he made that promise, and then obviously there's no question of coming out of that. So he fought very valiantly the battle, and obviously he was victorious. So here in this case also, now see, the Pandas, you know, they say that when Jagannath personally tells them that, you know, he will allow the foreign disciples, like they should allow the foreign disciples to come, or the foreign devotees of ISKCON or Vaishnavas, then they will do it, then they will allow it. But see, the very interesting thing now, there are two things here. During the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not create any kind of controversy about this. He accepted the norms of the Jagannath temple. He did not go and tell them that, well, you know, you have to allow Hindus to enter the temple, or you should. He did not do such kind of thing. He just accepted the norms, and he did not create any kind of controversy. But now we see that when Prabhupada had come, he was very fierce about this, and he took it personally that Jagannath has to allow. So we see two different contrasts here, and obviously, you know, so we can actually understand that. So although the Pandas will say that, okay, Jagannath himself, see, first of all, there are a couple of things that they say, that why you are insisting for the non-Hindus to enter the temple, or for your ISKCON devotees, because first of all, we have Rath Yatra. Because Rath Yatra means that Jagannath is coming himself outside the temple and he is giving darshan to all. So that is not happening in any temple in the world where the original Swayambhu devotees are brought outside of the temple and giving darshan. That is not happening anywhere in the world. So that is the first thing that they say. Second thing they say is that, well, we already have a Jagannath manifested in the Simadwar, in the Lion Gate, right? We know that if anyone is seeing Jagannath from a distance, they can actually see the Lord Jagannath also. Only Jagannath, they can see the deity from outside the temple because he is himself personally present. So they say that, well, he is present. So, like, you are already having darshan. Okay, so these two things they are mentioning. And I think one more thing, that, Jagannath is also very merciful in the form of his prasadam. And that prasadam is actually non-different from Jagannath. So you are also seeing Jagannath through that prasadam. So these two things they say, that this is why it is necessary that they should enter the temple. But, and then they obviously say that, when Jagannath wants, when he will reveal to us, then we will allow them. But, if these things were true, Prabhupada would have also said the same things. Prabhupada would have said that, it is to make, some devotees in our ISKCON, they feel that they are not allowed, and that is actually increase the separation of the devotees so that their separation can increase from Jagannath. And it's actually, Jagannath is actually merciful to them. Some devotees in ISKCON think like that. But my question to them is that why this only to foreign devotees? Why not to all the devotees? Why this separation only to foreign devotees? It does not make so much sense to me. Okay. And another thing is, the most important thing is, if Prabhupada had approved of that, see, how do we know what is the Lord's desire? We know only through the Acharya. And if Prabhupada would have said that, okay, it's a custom and a norm in the temple that we are supposed to follow, and when Jagannath will desire, it will happen. He would have said like that. Why was he so passionate about his disciples to allow in the temple? To be allowed in the temple. Why he was so passionate about it? To the extent that he said so many things. He said certain negative things about the Pandav also. And to this extent that Jagannath will get up and walk out from the temple. And he'll come to one of the ISKCON temples. So it makes, so generally, obviously, I would definitely accept Prabhupada's stand, whatever he has said, then that is what we are supposed to do and follow. So we also should have that desire that why we are not allowed. Why the foreign disciples or devotees are not allowed. Why non-Hindu devotees are not allowed. So that is what we are supposed to try our best. So Prabhupada never mentioned that, okay, it is the desire of Jagannath, so let it happen with its own time. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, he never created any kind of controversy. He accepted everything, whatever is going on. So now obviously, his particular era was a different era. And when in the association of Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association, personal association, they were already having darshan of Jagannath. Even though Jagannath, even Mahaprabhu actually was, he was distributing Harinam Sankirtan. So people used to have his darshan and they used to have darshan of Jagannath also. But here, the Lord was not present. In this particular era, Lord is not present. So obviously there is a difference, So it makes sense that whatever Prabhupada said, that we have to fight for. That, if we have that position, then we should fight and we should allow, somehow we should make the ISKCON devotees allowed to enter the temple. Yeah, so this is something, that interesting thing I heard from Prabhupada's memories. Yeah, so another topic, very important thing I wanted to discuss is about, in fact, I would like to give a seminar on this to whichever temple or whichever you know, congregation devotees, or you know, I would like to present something on this, that it is so important to study and understand one's acharya work thoroughly. Only after that one should actually try to relish or go deep in the leelas of the Lord. Because, you know, the problem, what I feel is that unless or until you are sufficiently thorough with understanding of Prabhupada's leelas, you will not be able to understand and you will not be able to act in a platform where you can, where you can create an example, you know, or where you can, an example where people can follow, you know, and where people are confident and sure that what decisions they are making is completely aligned with Prabhupada's will. So, unless and until you read Prabhupada's books, the teachings that he has given, and also his memories and the leelas of Prabhupada, because see, there's a very interesting thing. You see, in whatever Prabhupada has mentioned in the writing, in the books or in the letters or in the different articles that we have of Prabhupada's, one very interesting thing is that Prabhupada's leelas were quite, sometimes they were quite different from what he has given in the books and everything. You know, like for example, we were discussing about the observing the fasting of Lord Ramchandra during Ram Navami. And Prabhupada says that, you know, in his writings you find very clearly that Prabhupada expected us to follow the same kind of fasting that we do for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we have to fast till dusk or fast till sunset. Okay, so now, but practically he did, you know, when he was in a particular temple, when Ram Navami was there, he actually broke the fast at 12 and he allowed devotees to have normal prasadam instead of Ekadashi. So these couple of, you know, so now similarly, Prabhupada must have given theoretical knowledge in his books, and obviously when someone is giving writings, teachings in the books, it has to be strict standard. It has to be a stricter standard than the norm. Okay. So, but in Prabhupada's leelas, you will see that many places, according to time, place, circumstance for his disciples, like, you know, we were also discussing about the following the authority, if he's not chanting 16 norms, and Prabhupada was actually praising that authority and he was saying that, why can't you follow? He was quoting Bhagavad Gita that, you know, Arjuna was also not chanting. So now, see, generally we observe and hear that 16 round minimum is actually the most important instruction amongst all instructions, and that we have to follow very thoroughly and strictly. But now there are situations where Prabhupada made some concessions. So these things we should also know so that we don't become fanatics in our own preaching or presenting of our Krishna consciousness to others. So, you know, as a preacher or a teacher and as a devotee training others, these things are very important, because many times what happens, we are either taking one stand or another stand, which is like completely black or white. But it is not like that. Many times, so, you know, there are some situations or circumstances where the preacher has to think that what would Prabhupada do in certain circumstances, what he would have done, and whether he had given some kind of concession to someone or not earlier. So now see, Prabhupada obviously knows, you know, he can see right through us. So that capability we don't have. But at least by understanding Prabhupada's reciprocation to his disciples, we can understand one thing, that Prabhupada saw the essence of the devotee surrender to him. So if a devotee was surrendered to him, he would encourage that devotee like anything. You know, there's one very interesting thing. When we had gone to, you know, Radha Gopinath temple for Prabhupada's appearance, Vyas Puja offering, there was one Mataji, you know, who said, made an offering, and Prabhupada, you know, and she said that Prabhupada came to know that one of his sannyas disciples, he got married to a woman illicitly. He had a sexual connection with a woman, and he also begot a son. Instead of rejecting the disciple, Prabhupada asked him to get married with this woman. Not only that, but he also initiated his wife, partner, and they got them married and also made her a devotee. You also initiated hell. Can you imagine that? This is the extent of compassion that Prabhupada had. This is how he actually accommodated his disciples' surrender to him. In spite of many drawbacks and anarthas, Prabhupada saw the positive aspect of each and every disciple. And he encouraged that. So the most important, and then see, one more thing. When the disciples, some of the disciples of Prabhupada said that he is God, he became fierce like a thunderbolt. And he chastised them heavily. He also rejected them and he threw them out of his con. He took a very heavy stand. So Prabhupada acted like a thunderbolt, and then in this particular thing, you also see that he acted like a rose, like softer than a rose. Okay. So now, when we hear these kind of situations and how Prabhupada dealt with them, one thing we can understand very clearly, that the most important quality of a disciple or a devotee is humility and loyalty and surrender to the spiritual master. If the disciple has that quality, then the guru can go to any extent to help, to accommodate, to give compassion, to give concession. But if a disciple becomes disloyal and he becomes offensive to the guru, then he has to be rejected immediately. Okay, so disrespecting the guru, becoming disloyal to the guru, these things, they are the most gravest kind of offenses to the spiritual master. If you are breaking a regular principle, if you are doing certain activities, sinful activities, but if you are loyal to the spiritual master, spiritual master can still give you shelter. But if you, you know, if you offend, disrespect, become disloyal, then the spiritual master has no other option. So a very important lesson for Prabhupada's pastimes, and that is the reason I say that each and every devotee in ISKCON, they should be thoroughly trained in these areas. You know, it is very important that each and every devotee of ISKCON, they should understand Prabhupada's teachings deeply. You know, then only we can become good preachers. Because unless and until we have this knowledge, we will not be able to make proper judgments and take proper decisions in dealing with our juniors. We might become a bit judgmental and might become a little fanatic of certain things. Because, you know, many things are coming because of our own conditionings. That nature is developed because of our conditionings. But we have to think beyond our conditioning, and we have to think whether, you know, this is, you know, if the disciple or devotee has some good thing in them. And then we have to find the spark. That's what Prabhupada did. So we can understand. See, Prabhupada has given basic instructions, but then he also gave instructions which are extreme. You know, extreme to the sense that Prabhupada was very compassionate and accommodating also. You know, Prabhupada knew that if some of the disciples, they could not take chastisement, so he dealt with them in a different way. Prabhupada knew that some disciples would take chastisement, he would chastise them very severely. Right? So depending on time, place, circumstance and devotee's attitude and mood, Prabhupada would reciprocate differently. And he adjusted the principles also very differently. You know, I do remember one letter I read, you know, Prabhupada he gave a special concession to a devotee saying that, you know, I tell you that it is not necessary for you to chant 16 rounds. You just do this and, you know, if you can chant 16 rounds, it's okay. But if you cannot, then still it is, you know, you just go on with your service. So Prabhupada did give concession to his disciples depending on the time and circumstance. Very important. Right? So, I mean, you know, that's the reason it is very important to, you know, if you don't read about Prabhupada, about his teachings, because he is the Acharya of our ISKCON and he is going to be for the next 10,000 years. So how, you know, if you are taking some responsibility and some seva in a position, then it is very much necessary that you have to understand these things, because then you can relate and you can understand what Prabhupada would want from, you know, the such of circumstance, and then you will accordingly guide them and train them. And accordingly give instruction also. Right? So does it make sense?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So I can remember this much till now. You know, it's already 11:15, but probably I had more couple of things to share. So we can do it later. So any comments or questions, whatever discussed till now?
None from my side.
Yeah, sure.
I'm saying no comments or anything from my side.
Oh, nothing from your side. Okay, I thought one from my side. Okay. Okay. All right. So. Yeah, and you know, I just wanted to also, I just recollected one important point in this regard is that when Prabhupada also knew that one of his disciples, you know, he's leaving him and going to Gaudiya Math and he's taking shelter from a devotee, you know, that guru, he became ferocious. And, you know, he started criticizing, you know, and to the extent that, you know, he started saying that this devotee, you know, he is just sucking the blood of my guru. He has not done anything for him, but he is just sucking the blood of my guru. You know, so Prabhupada became very, very angry. You know, he took extreme sides, you know, like extreme, he expressed extreme emotions. Like, you know, he became like a thunderbolt in these kind of situations because he did wanted to teach disciples the importance of being loyal to the guru and following. Because, you know, when you talk about guru, you know, following and serving the guru is the most important thing. So if you're not doing that, then what is the use of having the guru? Right? So so it is very important to be loyal to our guru again. Otherwise, you know, the guru cannot give shelter. Okay? So this loyalty aspect is very important. Okay, all right. So we will continue next week. Next week is, I think, Monday's ecology. Okay, all right. Thank you, devotees, for joining. Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna.